We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com. We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Hello and welcome to SEO 101 on WMR.fm, episode number 463. This is Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my co-host is my company senior SEO, Scott Venak. Well, today is a news podcast. We're going to talk about what's happening, as usual, lots. And we'll get back to the SEO learning series in the next episode. All right. Well, Scott did a lot of prep for this show, and I felt like he could almost do it himself. So why don't you kick it off, Scott?
Yeah. So I'm on the wrong. Usually you talk more and I'm like not on the right screen here. Okay. So this is just some fun little bits here at Google. They like to mess with everybody a little bit, and they've recently removed, this is in the not quite SEO news section, they've removed the cache link from search results. So historically, you could do a search in Google, you could click on the ellipsis, the little, you know, the three vertical dots next to the listing, and you'd have some options there. And one of them was cache. You could click on cache, and you could see how Google viewed that page at the time it was cached. From a troubleshooting and SEO perspective, that's super valuable at times, because you get a glimpse into what might be broken. Sometimes you could see if your site had been hacked, for instance. You might not see it on your live site, but you could see it in the cache because things load differently. So there's a lot of reasons you might want to check that cache. And now they made it more difficult to do so, but you can still do it. They didn't remove the feature. They only removed the access, the easy access. So I just wanted to do this and tell some of you about this in case you're looking for the cache and can't figure out what's happened. There are a few ways you can check it. So the first is to simply, in your address bar, type cache colon and then your address, cache:website.com or whatever the page is. And you'll get that same cache as before, which is great. You can also check in Google Search Console. It's a little bit different there. If you log into Search Console, at the top of the screen, you've got the inspect URL, which if you've used GSC, you are probably familiar with that. Inspect URL, click on view crawled page. And on that screen, you can then see the source code of the page. You can't see a rendered version like you could in the cache, but you can still see the source code, which offers similar benefits. Again, you can check for whatever it is you're trying to troubleshoot. You can also see the exact date and time that Google crawled it. So, you know, that may help you as well if you're trying to figure out if Google is reaching that page. Lots of uses for that information. But if you do want the screenshot visual and you want an easy way to do it, there are also various, there's the Web Archives extension, which you can add to various browsers. There's one for Chrome, Firefox, and Safari. And it's actually pretty cool and makes it really easy. You just visit your page that you're on, you open up the extension, and you can select either Google, Bing, Yahoo, Wayback Machine, and there's some others in there as well, and see how that source has cached your site. That's probably the best way to do it, because you can check multiple sources, especially if you're troubleshooting an issue with ranking or whatever. So the links are not really podcast friendly. Check out the show notes. They will be in there. You can also just do a search for the Web Archives extension, and you should be able to find it pretty easily.
Yeah, it's a little annoying. I don't know why they did it. I guess it's to declutter things a bit, but whatever. I guess it's job security that we have. We can just search this with our own expertise versus single link. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I guess the thing with it, though, like how many regular users are clicking on that cat? Like my wife, she probably doesn't even know what that means, you know, and most people probably don't even know about it. But SEOs, they'll find a way. And as long as a feature lives on, you know, fair enough, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Well, more changes. And we love changes as we get older, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Depends on the change.
Yeah, exactly. So, wow. I might just go and have a coffee. You've written a lot here. There's a Google updates that have come out, and it's all thanks to a study that was done by Zippy, an SEO company, who found some strong correlations between features found on 50 sites that they reviewed and the winning or losing. Those who are winning or losing after recent Google algorithmic updates. Kind of botched that intro. But anyway, why don't you share some of the findings they had?
Yeah, so it's actually a pretty interesting study. A few things to note before I go over some of this information. It was a relatively small sample size, so only 50 websites. So that's actually really important to know because, yeah, I mean, it's not really all-inclusive, right? You don't know, but it does give some insight at least.
You, so you also have important to consider, too, that, I mean, I didn't look at the case study in depth, so maybe you can answer this, but how well diversified were those sites, too? Were they all in one niche? Because I find Google responds differently to different niches.
You know what? I didn't read every word in the study. It was actually quite long, but and that's a lot of words.
I'll check it out while you do this. I'll look.
Yeah, it had all the words. This is too many words. No, but I think it was a variety. I think it was a bit of a variety. And they did start off with, I believe they started with 100 websites, and they cut that back down to 50 for various reasons. They cut out the outliers and things like that. It is also based on a particularly volatile period between August and December of 2023. There were a lot of Google updates. Every SEO 101 you listen to in that time frame, it's like, yeah, there are more updates. And there's like overlapping updates, really crazy time. This is also all about correlation, not causation. You've probably heard us say that a lot. Just because it is this way doesn't mean that's the reason the site either won or lost in the update. And if you do plan on trying to implement any of this or make changes to your site based on what I'm about to say, look at the study first because they offer a lot more information on each individual point. I think they had 17 or 18 different metrics that they looked at, and they really give you more information on how they came to that metric and how much of an impact it has. So I'm not going to go into that level of detail because that's probably a series of podcasts to go over all that information.
They but also, sorry, just to jump in here, just so we can give this context. The person who did it redacted the URLs, which is annoying, but he did note the niche, which is good.
Oh.
And the monetization format for each of the sites. Obviously, it's a wide, well, not obviously, it is a wide, it's fairly diversified, but the monetization format they were using is also diversified. These had far more complications to the data we're talking about here. There could be so many other things that could be impacting it.
Yeah.
So correlation, you couldn't even make that more important to say correlation is not causation.
Yes. Because
this is definitely too small a group, in my opinion. Interesting.
Absolutely. But, yeah, exactly. I agree with that completely. And some of these things, they ring true anyways, which is good to see, right? So I'll just dive right into it. There weren't a lot of points that the winners had in common, but there were a few. One of them, which we've talked about this a lot, they demonstrated firsthand experience through text, unique imagery, and video. I mean, we talk about that all the time. The firsthand experience, like, so important, right? And that's all the winners in their study, all the 50 had that. They also used a lot of first-person pronouns, me, I, we. And that also makes perfect sense if you think about it, because if you're extending out your personal experience, you're going to say I, me, we, right? So again, it kind of contributes to that. Contact information displayed in the footer or elsewhere on the page. And I always find this funny because so many clients will come to us and they don't have any contact information. And I never understand why. It's clearly important. It's always been, well, not always. It's been important for a long time. and all the sites had proper contact information. And interestingly enough, they also, the winners displayed a cookie consent banner, which is a big thing these days. But this is a good example where correlation does not equal causation, because, you know, higher quality sites, which are typically going to win in these cases, are more likely to have those consent banners in place. So the consent banner, they just have it because they're good. It's not necessarily helping them rank. Possible, but I'm not sure that it is necessarily. The big thing here, though, the bigger takeaway is not so much how to win, but it's how to not lose. So all the losers, or most of the losers, used fixed ads in the footer that scrolled and followed the user down the page. How many of us hate those, especially on mobile? Oh, they're just the worst. They also used fixed autoplay video ads that follow the user while they scroll. They had a lot of stock imagery being used on their site, which, you know, that really does take away a lot of firsthand experience as well. It's logical. Use unique photos of your business if you have a team page. I mean, I've seen clients that come to us and on their team page, they've got a picture of a random stock image of a team of people that aren't even associated with the business. It's like, why don't you take a photo of your staff? Why are you pulling stock images of people? Things like that. A lot of the sites used push notifications, and important that they noted that not a single winning site used a push notification, but a lot of the losers did.
I'd like to boost that and say, please don't use those. And I'm glad to see that this is a correlation, because I hate those things so much.
I hate them too. Why do you need a push notification on a website, right? Like, maybe in some instances, like, I don't know, Amazon or something, right? Like a site there where people are constantly going back to and ordering, like,
yeah, you maybe. Don't. It's just another opportunity they see to reach out and bother us. And that's what everyone's thinking when they see that. But
yeah,
and the ship has sailed. That used to work back when it started, just like anything else in marketing. But it's really just, I see it as pointless now.
Yeah. Leave us alone.
Jeez.
missing and hidden logos. A lot of the losers had missing or hidden logos. And I don't know why you would want to do that, but don't do that. Again, no contact information present. Sites that lost typically did not have any contact information showing. Presence of affiliate links, which is interesting. I believe that one had a lower impact, but, you know, affiliate sites are often shady. There's a lot of legit, really good affiliate sites for sure. But in the world of spam and bad black hat websites, there are a lot of bad affiliate sites. So that kind of makes sense as well that, you know, affiliate sites would lose if you're not doing it properly. They also, and this I actually found a little bit interesting, a lot of the losers had, they were using what the study referred to as a mega menu, and they're calling a mega menu any menu with 30 or more links, which is, in my mind, almost all websites these days.
Yeah.
You know, in the dropdown, having 30 links is not hard to reach. But they did say that that's how they qualified a mega menu, but most of the losing sites had significantly more links than that. That was just their cutoff. So, but it does make sense. Like we often say, try to keep your header navigation concise as possible. Sometimes you need to have it longer. Just is how it is. A search function appearing in the footer, which was kind of an odd one to me, but keep your search higher up, I guess.
That seems like a silly thing to note, but.
It is, but it was, you know, they had it in there and they searched for it. And I don't know. It's just something that they saw on a lot of the losing sites. So they felt it was worth pointing out. The presence of a large navigational menu at the top of the website containing a large number of links. So that's essentially the mega menu thing again, but in the header. And this one was a little bit interesting. They had a link to a privacy page, which is kind of counterintuitive because we tell everybody have a privacy page. It's important. Everybody says that. And so then I read a bit more, and in the study, they explain it this way. And I'm just going to quote directly from the study. We're often told that privacy policies are good for user experience and establishing trust. On the flip side, spammers and low-quality affiliates are often the first to add privacy pages for exactly that reason. So it may be no surprise to see a weak correlation. Again, correlation, not causation. I wasn't even going to talk about it, but they had it in the report, and I did find it kind of interesting that they mentioned that. So don't remove your privacy policy, please. But it's almost another reason to say have a privacy policy. But yeah, so I have another line here. According to the study, the chances of these items having an impact seem to be the strongest when multiple features are combined together. So if you're one of the losers, you probably had a bunch of these things. You know, just having affiliate links or just using stock photography or just having a huge menu is not necessarily going to harm you by itself. It's when you combine a bunch of these things. And we even say SEO often is, I don't know, a game of inches or like lots of little things that add up to be a big thing. And it's kind of true with if you're going to lose out as well. Doing one bad thing doesn't necessarily hurt you unless it's a really bad thing. So anyways, I found it kind of interesting. I feel like going through the study is probably worthwhile. You can learn a little bit from it, get some ideas. So check it out.
It's a refresher, you know, on some things. And it's also a good use of our critical thinking skills to filter through the stuff that I don't think is likely a causation, but it's still interesting to see. I'd love to know where he got his ideas for the list of things to look for. Maybe he just thought of every possible thing that could have an impact and then looked at every site for it. I don't know.
And then just pulled out what they found and condensed it maybe. Yeah. He doesn't talk about what drove them to choose the things to check for. So I bet it was an exhaustive list, similar to what we might do in an audit, and then just pick everything that's common across.
Maybe. It's a good idea. I mean, I think it'd be interesting to do in certain markets that you want to do marketing for. Be good for advertising too, for any marketers out there. If you're trying to target a specific niche, do one of these studies yourself. And
well, that's the results. You know, these guys are going to get a lot of links. Look, we're even talking about it right now. So, you know, it comes back to build great content. I mean, it's great content. They put a lot of effort into doing the study. They built great content. They're getting links from search engine land and who knows where else. We're talking about it. Build great content and people talk and you know, it builds legs.
Yeah. Okay. So the next bit here is about negative local search ads. And when I saw this, I was absolutely gobsmacked. Bill Hartzer discovered this. Or I should say, yeah, I don't know whether or not he discovered or he's passing it along, but he certainly popularized this information, which is just plain disgusting and shocking. So local service ads, something we don't talk about because we don't do any ads for our clients, but this is something you need to know about. So if you do any local service ads, you need to have a Google Business profile. It just makes sense, right? Because you're doing local. Well, what happened here was a person was doing local service ads, was doing quite well with them. All of a sudden, leads stopped, and they couldn't figure what the hell was going on. They contacted Google support to find out what was happening and only got scripted responses, my favorite thing. Finally, they were able to speak with a rep who told them that the ads were removed because their Google Business profile had two LSA accounts linked to it, despite only having one that the client knew of. The other account was unknown, which means they had no credentials for it, so they couldn't turn it off. This is something, a plain and frightening chink in Google's armor, because there's just no way around this. The Google rep said that the only fix, and this is unbelievably daft and horrific, is to create a new Google Business profile from scratch. And then, which would, of course, you'd lose all your required reviews, all of the acquired reviews, and also all of the authority that you'd built on that, all the Google posts. I mean, it's incomprehensible that anyone would do that, and that Google would even suggest that is a good idea. It's appalling. And I could go on forever rant about this, because that's just, I don't know. It's becoming a typical Google thing. They just let these things fall through the cracks and whatever, your small business. Horrifying. This black hat technique has essentially destroyed their account for Google Ads anyway, which for many businesses is their lifeblood. Ads are incredibly powerful. This is especially true when you're dealing with local businesses that have very competitive environments and they haven't been able to crack that organic top rankings. Those rankings. And that's often because, not always, but often because their competitors have been using black hat tactics to get to the top of organic rankings, or they're simply too entrenched. So these smaller businesses just aren't able to get in there. And there's many other reasons from those businesses simply not having the expertise, the interest, or the time to invest in this. So they do ads. And this is the lifeblood of Google, frankly. And it's shocking to me that they could even possibly suggest such a thing. So I'm hoping that Google sees this article, and someone higher up is going to make some change here, because this is unacceptable. Any business out there should, you know, it's already a risk putting so many eggs in the Google basket, but we have no choice. They are the market. So when they don't protect us from bad actors, it's doing no one, it's harming themselves and others. It makes no sense. Next up is, I'll try and do more here, Scott, since you can give your voice a break. there was a really good article by housefresh.com, and the title was "How Google is Killing Independent Sites Like Ours." They actually, ironically, their file name for the page is David versus Digital Goliath. And normally something like this might get some attention, you know, but it doesn't mean that it's going to get Google's attention. In this case, it did. And that's because it was so well written and so clearly outlined that there were deficiencies in how Google was treating these particular sites. I'm not going to get into the details because it is quite extensive. We tried to simplify it into an article or into this podcast, but it became just unwieldy. But I will read Danny Sullivan's response. Danny Sullivan's, of course, the search advocate now at Google, one of the main ones anyways. And he often responds to these issues. And to his credit, and to Google's credit, in this case, they actually applauded the person who wrote this. So Danny says, "Thank you. I appreciated the thoughtfulness of the post and the concerns and the detail in it. I passed it along to our search team along with my thoughts that I'd like to see us do more to ensure we're showing a better diversity of results that does include both small and large publications. One note to an otherwise excellent write-up, the article suggests we do some type of, quote, manual check, quote, on claims made by pages. We do not. That reference and link is about manual reviews we do if a page has a manual spam action against it and files a reconsideration request. That's entirely different from how our automated ranking system looks to reward content. Somewhat related, just making a claim and talking about a, quote, rigorous testing progress, unquote, and following an EEAT checklist doesn't guarantee a top ranking or somehow automatically cause a page to do better. We talk about EEAT because it's a concept that aligns with how we try to rank good content. But our automated systems don't look at a page and see a claim like, quote, I tested this, unquote, and think it's better just because of that. Rather, the things we talk about with EEAT are related to what people find useful in content. Doing things generally for people is what our automated system seeks to reward, using different signals." And he gives a link for more information. "Thank you again for the post. I hope we'll be doing better in the future for these types of issues." So that was the end of what Danny said, but there was a follow-up conversation. And I thought his last sentence in his follow-up answer sort of summed up Google's response. "Yes, we should be rewarding the best content, regardless of site size. As I said, I hope we'll get better here." All right, so that was Danny's last word, and I can only hope he's right. He did mention in his discussion that he has brought up issues like this before, saying that he really wants this to happen. Not sure how, like he says, this, he brought it up fairly often, so that's not a good indicator that it's a priority for Google. We can only hope that he has some influence on this, and we do see improvements. It is very frustrating, though. One of the main points that was brought up by HouseFresh is that content they created was being essentially trumped by other sites that were much larger and they were getting the rankings for their content. Anyways, it was just not good. And it was very, very well put together and clear. It's extensive, though, so be prepared for a read.
Well, one thing I found kind of funny is that originally they had said that their content was being outranked by Reddit, which ticked them off. And then Reddit dropped down, but now they're being outranked by Search Engine Land, which is like, I don't know, it's just really funny. You know, Google is still, it didn't really accomplish anything yet, but you're still seeing the bigger sites outranking for it, which I don't know.
As digital professionals and business owners, we understand the critical importance of a secure and high-performing website. That's why I want to talk to you about Kinsta, a managed WordPress hosting provider that delivers exceptional speed, security, and reliability. Kinsta's infrastructure is optimized for WordPress, ensuring your site loads lightning fast and ranks well in search results. They utilize Google Cloud's premium tier network and CD3 virtual machines, which significantly boost performance. In fact, Kinsta customers often experience up to a 200% increase in site speed just by migrating to their platform. Security is paramount, and Kinsta provides enterprise-grade measures to protect your valuable data. They are one of the few WordPress hosting providers with SOC 2 certification, guaranteeing the highest level of security for your website. Kinsta's My Kinsta dashboard offers a user-friendly interface with a comprehensive suite of tools to manage your site efficiently. From cache control and debugging to redirects and CDN setup, My Kinsta simplifies website administration. For SEO 101 listeners, Kinsta offers specific advantages. Their platform is optimized for speed, a crucial ranking factor in search engine algorithms. Their security measures protect your site from malware and hacking attempts that could damage your online presence. And their expert support team is available 24/7 to assist with any technical issues that may arise. Ready to experience Kinsta's hosting for yourself? Get your first month free when you sign up at Kinsta.com today. It's the perfect opportunity to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses worldwide to power their websites. Visit Kinsta.com to get this limited-time offer for new customers on select plans. Don't miss out. Get started for free today.
At Tanger Outlets, find hundreds of brands at unbeatable value. Save big on outerwear, must-have handbags, active essentials, classic favorites, footwear, and more, up to 70% off. Shop Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. All the best brands, all on sale, every day. Only at Tanger Outlets.
Like, what, how do you fight that, really? You just hope Google makes changes and gives credit where credit is due eventually.
Yeah, but I mean, I think I saw a comment from an oldie, but a goodie, Matt McGee. We haven't heard from him in a while, but he was mentioning that back in the day, he met with Google about some other issues, and it was about U2 and his website that he did there and some of the websites he worked on and how he wanted them to be treated better and more fairly because of these instances that were very similar to this. I don't remember all the details, but it was very similar. And he said that they did see improvements later. Now,
okay,
was that coincidental? Who knows? But he says, you know, there is a chance that we could see improvements. But the main point is they've been talking about this a long time. And issues like this will probably never stop happening. Google has to find a way to reward good content on both on websites, regardless of site size, like Danny said. However, how do you do that without succumbing to spammers? And how do you do that nowadays with the onset of so much AI out there that makes it look like you're an authority when you're not? Tricky, man. I wouldn't want to be Google in these instances. I don't know how they would do it, although I would love to be part of the thought process. It'd be pretty fascinating.
It would be an interesting landscape to work in, for sure.
Yeah, there's got to be some fascinating indicators they have to work with. But obviously, it's no easy nut to crack, even for those people, because they're no slouches on brains. Okay, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some local SEO and then AI in search.
SEO 101 will be back right after recess.
Welcome back to SEO 101 on WMR.FM. hosted by myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my company's senior SEO, Scott Fanak. All right, so local SEO. What is this about Google Business Profile Images, Scott?
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about a real-life scenario that came up maybe about 2 weeks ago. We had a client contact us. They were unhappy with some images that were posted to their Google Business Profile from a user, and they wanted those images removed. So a little background on those images in particular, they were standard review type images. There was a photo of the outside of the business. I think there were a couple from the inside. I can't remember what they all were, but they were all legitimate images. There was nothing bad about them. The client just didn't like them. Maybe it was, I don't even know why. Maybe it was the quality. Maybe they didn't like the fact that they didn't pick them themselves. So they wanted them removed. So our response to them was essentially, you can't. They're there to stay. But I wanted to sort of bring this up a little bit because some of you out there might be thinking you don't like user-generated images. So I wanted to talk about some of the benefits and how to get those images removed if they are worthy of being removed. So the benefits are you know, pretty straightforward, really. Having users post images to your profile really helps customers discover and understand your services. You get a different perspective. You see what real people are seeing, not just what the business wants them to see, which I guess is for better or for worse sometimes for the business, but it's honest. But they also help show both Google and customers that people are engaged with your business. If Google sees that it's active, it helps your page to rank well within local. And that's huge. It helps customers see that people are engaging with you, which is great for attracting new customers. And it also helps fill photo gaps that business owners may miss. So, you know, I know a lot of clients, they don't post photos, and there are all kinds of opportunities for photos, even if it's just like the exterior of their business, their reception, their whatever it might be. Customers fill those gaps, again, for better or for worse. But I see that as always being for better, because even if a customer is posting something bad, yeah, that's not great. Like maybe you've got a dirty bathroom or a garbage can is overflowing. I don't know, whatever it might be. It gives you insight into how you can improve. If you see photos you don't like, well, fix it. So if someone takes a photo of that same thing again, it looks better. Or do the same thing, fix the issue and post photos of it. It just gives you an honest look. Like I personally, as a user, love hotel photos the most, because if we're traveling, hotels are the worst because they doctor the photos. They show pools from an angle that makes the pool look like it's this gigantic pool when it's like this little tiny hole in the ground. Like, a user doesn't post photos like that. They don't doctor photos to make them look better than they are. It's just like a fully honest look. So from a user perspective, these photos are awesome because you get a real authentic view. Again, the business owner might not like that, but that's, I think, why Google allows it. It makes everybody honest.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned the last episode or one of the previous ones, how much I like seeing images of stores and the products they have. Like, in that case, I use an example at a venture store and totally would love this, would have loved to have seen what they had. It would have made me rush over there even faster. It was beautifully represented. Like, everything was out there all in tight fashion. It was a small store, but they did it in such a perfect way that I could have seen everything, go, wow, this place is decked out. I'm excited. I didn't have that. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. So images are really important. And of course I did post it for them, but, yeah, have those of your own. Sure, make them look pretty, but encourage others. Don't just accept that they will. Encourage them to. It's great for your profile. Absolutely awesome. Just make sure it looks just as nice most of the time.
yeah, exactly.
It's right. Like that pool. If it was a pool that's normally full of leaves and just looks like crap all the time, well, yeah, you're going to look pretty bad if most of the images look like that, whereas your image looks all pretty.
Well, that happened to us when we went to Mexico not too long ago. The pools look great in the photo when we got there. They're broken tiles. The pools weren't dirty per se. They were fine. I mean, you're going to have sand in a resort pool, things like that. You can't avoid it because people come from the beach, whatever. But yeah, the broken tiles in certain areas that were kind of just not kept up and there were problems. And you don't see that in the resort photos. They're not going to show you that, right? So
yeah. Yeah, a lot of those resorts must be so cash strapped after COVID. I can't even imagine. Probably even a simple tile fix is too much for them right now.
Oh, no kidding, right?
Got to be a tough market.
Yes. All right. And What if somebody posts an image you hate and it legitimately should be removed? So let's pretend there are some images that are bad, and I'll go over what qualifies as being bad in a second here. This is how you do it. You click on the little flag beside the image. Pretty straightforward. Click on the flag, and you're going to go to a screen where Google gives you different options on why you think that image should be flagged and removed. And the options you can choose are if they're offensive, hateful, or sexually explicit. Makes sense. If there are legal issues, if there are privacy concerns, if the image is poor quality, which is a bit general. I don't know how poor the quality has to be for Google to remove it. I think there's going to be a limit somewhere, like a lower, it's not going to be top quality. So, you know, there's going to be a point where maybe it's too grainy or what have you. If it's not a photo or video of the place, maybe it's just completely irrelevant. Or other. So if you have another reason, you can describe, it gives you a little area and you can type out why you think it should be removed. Google will review the removal request, and if they feel it is appropriate, remove the image. In terms of timelines, I don't know how long they take to actually act on this stuff. I would imagine you're going to be waiting a while. I haven't really encountered a situation where I've had to request an image to be removed. So have you?
Yes. Yeah, quite a few times for clients. Often it's not necessarily that important. That's probably why they don't get removed. Like, well, we don't like this because it's got this brand in there, or we don't carry this anymore. It's like, well, we'll try, but I give them pretty low chances of getting them removed. Sometimes it's poor lighting, sometimes this or that, but it's, again, the likelihood of having those removed in that way are pretty low. I can't think of any that actually were slam dunks for being removed, though, sadly.
Sadly, but that's good.
In a way, it is. Yeah. I mean, again, there's no reason why that one shouldn't have been removed that showed a brand they don't care anymore, right? I mean, how is that helping them or helping anyone if it shows a brand they don't have anymore?
Yeah.
But again, I guess it's a matter of manpower at Google too, because they have to review these and they're like, screw that. Moving on to the next one. That's a little more, more of a concern, right?
Could you imagine if that was your job at Google? All you do is look at these removal requests, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. I don't know if that would be interesting or boring.
I would want to write a book after that, I bet. Yeah. That stuff that you saw. Oh my God. Although the images, maybe not. Wouldn't be as that much excitement, but I would say it would be really interesting if you're doing it for, reconsideration requests.
Oh yeah.
Wow. I can't even imagine the stuff they see. And I'm sure they're under such a strict NDA, they can't do anything with it, but it's too bad. I would love to see a book of the funniest ones they've had or something.
They should put that out there. There should be a website for that.
So now we're into AI and search, our new section now, which is certainly long overdue. OpenAI, there is rumors that it's working on a web search product. Now, they're very tightly intertwined with Bing. In fact, Bing is one of their main investors. So obviously, it's partly powered by Bing. This is all through a, quote, source. I don't know who that is or what it is. This is from Search Engine Land, though, so I would imagine it's fairly reputable. Their web crawler that's going out, OpenAI's, is called GPT-Bot. So if you do monitor crawlers, you may have seen that. Now, to give you some perspective in terms of traffic, in December 2023, Google had 84.2 billion visits. ChatGPT had 1.6 billion. That's nothing to sneeze at. I mean, yeah, it's a small part of what Google had. So that's important to see that this is not really going to be an amazing competitor right now. And probably in the future, frankly, because as this article even notes, all of the contenders, even Bing, really haven't succeeded. Bing's the closest to succeeding. DuckDuckGo is the second best after Bing. So, you know, chances are they don't have much of a chance, but the fact that they are connected with Bing may help a bit, certainly. I'm always about having another competitor out there. I don't care who it is. If Amazon put out search, I'd be pissed that it's yet another thing they own, but you know what? I don't care. As long as there's more diversity, I do not at all like Google having this much control.
Yeah, you know, I really miss the days back in the early days when I started. And when we would run a report for the clients, we would have 10, 11, 12 different search engines in our reports. And that was back when it actually mattered. You know, people were getting traffic from Lycos and all the AltaVista and Ask Jeeves, and people cared. And if your rankings were just trash somewhere, it didn't matter. You always had a backup. You always had somewhere. And these days, if you don't rank in Google, you're probably dead. You know, like Bing, I don't think most businesses, if you're online only, could really survive with only ranking well at Microsoft or only ranking well at Yahoo, which is more or less the same, or whatever.
Yeah.
And
I don't know. Bing has shown some interesting results for clients in ads. I can't think of any that have done exceptionally well through organic, but ads have surprised me occasionally in terms of the conversion ratio, but pretty rare. You're right. It was nice back then. It wasn't easy because, again, we had more search engines to understand and work with, but that was nice in a way too. It was much more diverse. There could be experts in different search engines. My gosh, yeah. How long has it been since then?
Yeah, no kidding. Right? We'll call the Yahoo expert. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, no, it's you all know, Google.
I see ChatGPT having a good potential. So like when we've had all these other competitors, even DuckDuckGo and what have you, trying to beat out Google now, it's kind of just one search engine after another trying to attract people. But ChatGPT has already attracted, like they say 1.6 billion. Search Engine Land says they've got a long ways to go, but ChatGPT is brand new and they're up to 1.6 billion. That did not take them very long. How long has DuckDuckGo been around? And they're probably around the same volume. And ChatGPT is just going to keep growing from there. Maybe they've got a shot. I think there's something there. And with the rate that they're growing, it might come maybe this calendar year. I don't know.
You know, the more I think about it, the more I think that of all times, this may be the best chance, best opportunity. Yeah, because Google, I mean, they renamed Bard to Gemini. I mean, they're just a mess.
They're floundering.
They're just, I get so fed up with their stupid naming and how often they change and drop products. And they're a hot mess unless it's actual Google search and organic and paid ads. So when it comes to AI, I'm not confident they're going to do the right thing. I'm confident they have great technology, but are they going to make the right moves? It's anyone's guess. It's certainly, definitely not a shoe-in. So I don't know.
I want to give a quick real world example from this last weekend. So we were out trying to find out something for dinner. We were at the butcher and they sold us on this gigantic tri-tip steak. We had no idea what it was. I honestly had never heard of it before. And Lindsay buys this thing and it's massive and it's this weird shape. And it's like, what are we going to do with this stupid thing? I don't even know.
And need so we're two trying spatulas to flip it.
Oh yeah. And like you need a forklift. Right. And so Lindsay's like, hey, what are we going to do with this? I'm like, I don't know. You bought it. So she goes to figure it out and she starts to Google how to cook a tri-tip steak. And of course, all the blogs are, well, the history of beef. And, you know, you get 5,000 words before you even get to the recipe. So she's like, I'm going to try some. She went to ChatGPT, said, how do I cook a tri-tip steak? Boom. The simplest recipe you've ever seen in your life. Summarize. I don't know where they pulled it from. Who knows? So we followed it. We did it. Well, it was already pre-marinated, so it was more cooking instructions and less seasoning and that. We followed what ChatGPT said. It was maybe the best, tastiest cut of beef I've ever eaten in my life. And I don't know how much of that is related to what ChatGPT told us to do, but we did what they said. They said, cook it for this long, flip it now, this heat, blah, 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 all the things, right?
Or how many drinks you had before it.
Yeah, the bottle of tequila might have not. My point is, we didn't use a website, like we didn't go to a recipe site. We didn't use Google. It was straight up ChatGPT. We got what we wanted. It worked in real life, you know, and she's using it actually a lot more than I am, which is crazy. And so I don't know, after that real world experience, I see it growing quickly because we're starting to use it in our real lives, like not work related to try to do things. And I feel bad for all the website owners and even for us because we help them do stuff. And if I'm resorting to something that circumvents even any business person, I don't know.
I think it's a very scary thing that doesn't give credit to their source of data. I mean, even if it's amalgamated, sources should be there.
Yeah, we got this recipe from these yeah, websites, whatever. Yeah.
So the more AI is wrapped into a commercial setting, the more I'm sure that that stuff is going to get implemented just from a pure legislative angle. I mean, I can't see it not being, it needs to be done. Otherwise, yeah, what's this AI got? I mean, it's got to run off something. It's a little scary, no question about it. Of course, I try not to even think in that way, simply because we're always, always changing and with the times as SEOs. So I'm sure we'll be fine, but it is creepy for businesses. Don't like it too much. All right, so we got questions and comments here. This is about a screaming frog issue. Is this something you ran into?
Yes, this is an issue I ran into just last week, or maybe it was even earlier this week. I can't remember now. Time's going by at an unprecedented rate. And I've never seen this happen before, and it drove me a little bit crazy until I sorted it out. So we ran a crawl on a client's website. And one of the things I do when I run a crawl is I check response codes, I look for redirects and 404 errors that shouldn't be there. And in this case, there were two pages on the site in particular that were coming up as a 404 error. And they were important top-level pages that definitely should be good. I'm like, okay, well, that's not good. And I start looking. I go to the website first. Like, why is this particular page not loading? Well, it's loading. It's loading just fine. Like, okay, well, screaming. So I re-spider it, because sometimes Screaming Frog will glitch. So I re-spider it in Screaming Frog. It loads the same error, 404 error. I'm like, what? And so the more I start digging, I'm putting the URL into Google Search Console to inspect it. I'm putting it into header checkers, trying to duplicate this 404, and everything says it's fine. And then I look in Screaming Frog, and the URL is actually listed twice. It's listed as a 200 okay, and it's listed as a 404 not found. So it's saying two different header statuses for the same page. Well, now I'm going completely bonkers, because that doesn't make any sense. Like, how is this a glitch in Screaming Frog? What's going on? So then I'm starting to research it, and eventually I figured out what was happening. And I started looking at the inlinks. I wanted to know how Screaming Frog was finding this page and noting it as being broken. And what was happening is, on a few blog posts on the client's site, the code for the URL was incorrect. It was pointing to whatever.com/whatever/%0A, which is essentially code for a new line in in ASCII or something. I can't remember where that means, new line. But Screaming Frog wasn't displaying the %0A in the URL in the crawl. So I couldn't see that. It was like kind of hidden. And it's really a glitch in Screaming Frog's end. They should have displayed that in the list of 404 URLs. It should have had the %0A version of the URL listed. And there would have been no problem. It would have been super easy to figure out. And this took me way too long to figure out, sort through this problem. But I wanted to bring it up because sometimes you're going to see issues like this.
Yeah.
Somebody else may have encountered this and had the same problem, or maybe you will tomorrow and be like, oh, I Scott was talking about this. He had this problem. And just a point to, if you have an error in Screaming Frog, you'll probably do this anyways. Look at the inlinks for that error to trace why it's an error. And I would have gotten there eventually. I should have started there when I was trying to sort it out, but I didn't. You know, sometimes you overthink things, and I overthought it and I got confused. But I wanted to point it out because I've never seen that happen. And I'm probably going to email Screaming Frog and tell them, because that's something they could easily prevent. Because, you know, I was looking for this one URL that didn't exist, but it did exist, but they told me it didn't. Anyways.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Your best SEO tools are not perfect. So
I'd say that is a good mini blog you should put on our site. Pretty interesting.
That is actually, I 100% should do that.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I'm going to do that. Check out our blog. By the time you hear this, it will be up there, hopefully.
Awesome. Well, another thing, I accidentally skipped one of our AI one of our AI pieces of news. So, and this is really interesting. I did see this the other day as well. Humans prefer AI-generated copy. This is a survey that was found by, was it done by SEMrush?
It was done by SEMrush, yeah.
It was part of the report. 700 U.S. consumers were surveyed, and out of all of them, 54% of the time, AI's copy was the winner in terms of preference. So, for example, writing a blog post intro, AI's version, 54% of the time, human 46. What is one of the other bigger ones? This one's really big. Writing social media ads. 70% of the people liked the AI content more than the human. They didn't know which ones. This is blind test. They don't know who which one's AI, which one's human. Huge differences. Writing a product description, 65% liked AI. Same thing with social media posts. Blog post paragraphs, 60%. Really impressive. And so if you ever wonder if you should be using AI, go for it. Because there's no way in hell you're being penalized for that.
Just make it better.
You know, yeah, Google's not going to say, oh God, you used AI. No, because it's good. It's good content. It is saving you time and lets you get stuff done faster. Just make sure that, you know, those aren't good instances where you would, but wherever possible, add your own expertise. So it's not just vanilla AI, which everyone will be using. All right. And we'll have a link in our show notes to that survey along with the other articles we've discussed. So do make sure to check out that. You can sign up for it by going to SEO101radio.com. And right there, you'll find the link to sign up to our show notes. Well, on behalf of myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my company's senior SEO, Scott Van Ack, thank you for joining us today. If you have any questions you'd like to share with us, please feel free to post them on our Facebook group, easily found by searching SEO 101 Podcast on Facebook. Have a great week, and remember to tune into future episodes, which air twice a month on WMR.fm.
Great. Thank you for listening, everybody.
We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap. Also, on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.